This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Coming in for just a little bit tomorrow. I'm actually donating a bit of time to just help a couple of users out on some things, but that's going to be fun because I'll just come in my jeans. So it will be great, and my t-shirt. It is episode 192. Won't be long before we'll be up to 200, which just seems inconceivable. And it won't be long before we'll be at the 4-year mark, which will be episode 206, I think. So I have to start figuring out now what we're going to do for the 4th anniversary, since my 3rd anniversary guy dumped out on me and didn't actually do it. Maybe I should start bugging him now. I might do that. Start bugging him now. But come on, man. You bailed out on me last time. Anyways, all is well. It's been a busy week. Busy week. I've been hopping between a lot of little projects. I did have a meeting today on a large project that's coming up. And we were hoping to get this started in November, and then we learned that we needed to have a setup meeting. And so we had that today, and then we learned that we needed a follow-on meeting. So that just got scheduled, and that will be December 17th. And then we might have the final meeting to actually get this thing launched, which I'm guessing will be sometime in January. So I don't know that this thing is going to get started anytime soon, but everything will be fine. It will just all be fine. There is nothing to fear. I am proceeding along. I have uploaded the files for the last book, Grumpy Old Prophets. I think probably I need to do one more read through, but I was close enough to it that I went ahead and uploaded the files and got a proof copy started coming my way, and then I figured that will be in tomorrow or maybe today. I'll give it a quick gander, and then this weekend I'm going to do a full read through one more time and see if there's anything that absolutely has to be changed. And if there is, then I'll go ahead and do one more proof copy, probably. And, then we'll call it done, and I'll start ordering books. Because this is going to be Christmas gift for a lot of people, the set of them. And so I've got a list, and then I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to my beta readers who gave me input, and I'm going to tell them, okay, you read the book. That tire screeching was in front of me. I thought it sounded like the tire screeching came from behind me, and I was like, what? Is somebody getting ready to hit me? But it was the car in front of me. It's so exciting doing these podcasts driving home. I'm really expecting that someday, like, I'm going to have a tire blowout or something happen, and it will be captured on the recorded memory. So, anyways, I will be going back to my beta readers and asking them, well, offering to them that if they will go to Amazon.com and write a review on Amazon.com, the first 15 that do that, I will go ahead and send them a signed copy of the production book. So, little incentive. See if I can stir up some interest that way. I finished up Super Freakonomics, and I might do a podcast on that in a little bit. A lot of interesting stuff. But one of the big things that came out of that was this idea of people respond to incentives. Negative incentives, positive incentives, people respond to incentives. And sometimes not only the ways that you expect them to respond to the incentives, and therein lies the very interesting conundrum of trying to herd a bunch of humans in the same direction. I'm doing that research because I am moving forward with Amanda and the Skleeberry Tree series, the Farforth Fables series, and so it's really about economics and globalization and industrialization, and so I'm in the process then of collecting this information about economics and all that stuff. And so this is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Because as I said before, I really do think I need to do this series first and get a better understanding of globalization and free trade and industrialization so that I can then move on and do the Realmers series. Because the Realmers series, interestingly enough, turns all of that on its head. And I need to understand what the fundamental effects would be on a society where you have people who are no longer required to work because they can literally sit in their homes and do what they want to do, because all the interest, when the wind came and took over the earth, all the interest that they paid for on their loans was applied against their principal. All their loans were refinanced to where all they had to do was pay on the principal with 0% interest rates. And so many of them ended up with their houses paid for. They no longer have to pay for any utilities because that's supplied for free by the wind. All your energy is free. You can grow all the food you need to survive in the backyard. All the sanitation is free. All the septic is free. And so people just work at what they want to just make things they can barter with or make things that they can sell in exchange for other things. And so the level of money that you need has dropped considerably because there is no more insurance companies as well, because the wind disbanded them. There's no more doctor bills because the wind just heals everybody that has a sickness. So it's a completely different society than we're used to dealing with in terms of economics. And I'm thinking that writing Amanda in the Skleeberry Tree is going to help me understand that more, just in terms of learning more about economics and incentives and what drives people and blah, 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 blah. Anyways, so I do think that this is the next thing that needs to be done. And this is probably going to be, if I can keep it to 5 books total, which means I need to write 4 more. If I keep it to 4 more books total, I think I should be able to get this done maybe in 3.5 years, possibly 4 years. Maybe a little shorter. We'll see. The trick will be keeping it light and happy and very clever through 5 books. That's going to be the challenge. But, you know, like my daughter told me, there's nothing to fear. Jesus will help you. I said, that's exactly right, sweetie. So anyways, this week I wanted to talk about a special I saw on PBS that was part of their effort to do fundraising. It was called Super Brain. And I actually started watching this on Thanksgiving. We had gotten everything together. We were expecting some friends to come down and visit with us. Or no, I started watching this on Sunday. That's what it was. My wife cooked the family meal on Sunday. And she had everything ready to go at 1 o'clock, which is our normal eating time. And my kids had gotten delayed getting out of church, and so we were all ready to go. The food was on the table, everything was set, and so everyone kind of congregated into the living room while we were waiting for my daughter and son-in-law and granddaughter to come along. And I just turned on the TV and happened to go by PBS, and there's this program called Super Brain, and it was by Dr. Ruby Tanzi, I think is his name. We did miss the first couple of minutes of it. So I'm going to be missing a couple of pieces of information, but I think I can piece most of that together. What made this program interesting to me is that I have been working from a framework for many years now that basically says I am at war with myself, that there is within me a flesh and a spirit, and the flesh is determined and focused and intent on bringing me destruction, and the spirit is determined and focused and intent on bringing me success. And it is my job every day to choose between motivations and actions that are being purported by the flesh versus motivations and actions that are being proposed, we'll say, by the spirit. And I have expressed this idea to learned people who gave me an odd look when I said it. I have a relative who is a psychiatrist who has been in the mental profession for many years, has been, you know, a counselor, was a chaplain, has worked in this field. He had read my book, Still Whispers, and in the process of reading the book, he then asked me later, he said, "So the flesh, is that like the devil?" And immediately when he said that, I thought, because in his profession, what he has always tried to accomplish is an integration where people take responsibility for everything that's going on in their mind and say, yeah, this is me and this is what I need to control. But he's really looking for integration or actualization or whatever you want to call it, that I am one unified person. And so as we talked about that, I said fundamentally, when I was talking to him, I said, I believe I am not one, I am two. And he was not really that comfortable with that idea. And so, which is fine. So what's fascinating to me, though, is that as you look across society, as you look across sort of the general archetypes, the class consciousness that we have about this issue, is we find that our generally agreed upon approach, our consensus on this issue, just as the general populace, is that we are two, we are not one. And the way that it manifests itself is with the demon on one shoulder and the angel on the other. And whenever that is represented in popular culture, the demon and the angel usually have our faces. And so there is this recognition in the general populace that I have voices in my head that all sound like me, and one of them is telling me to do stuff that will not benefit me in the long run, and one of them is telling me to do stuff that will help me to succeed. So despite what my very learned psychiatrist relative believes and what he teaches as has been taught, there is this innate understanding that the general populace has to have, the general populace has, of this idea of the conflict within. Okay, so we start up listening to Superbrain, and the guy who is talking is actually from Harvard, and he is the head of the Joseph P. and Rose F. Kennedy Professor, well, he is the Joseph P. and Rose F. Kennedy Professor of Child Neurology and Mental Retardation at Harvard. So it's like, woohoo, credentials, yay. obviously a very learned man, and he begins to talk about terms that I had heard before, and that is that we basically have three internally competing brain systems, can be internally competing, and in his mind, the best model for us to use is not that we are our brain, but that we are a user of our brain. And he explained this at the very beginning, that part that I missed, but he referred back to it, and from that, I suppose that what he said was that we have taken a very interesting turn in evolution, in our brain development, that we have actually developed to the point where we have a consciousness, an awareness of what's happening within us in our brain function. And because we have developed this consciousness, we then have the capability to be separate from our brain. Now, okay, that's fine. My interpretation would be that, in fact, I am an eternal spiritual being who is having a human experience, and my consciousness does not arise from some mechanism that's evolved in my brain. My consciousness arises from the fact that I am a spiritual being, and I have a consciousness that can exist outside my brain, and that when I die, I will continue to exist. So however you get there, nonetheless, we both arrive at the same point, that we are a consciousness that is aware of the functioning of our brain, and through our direct effort can change the functioning of our brain. And this is what he referred to as acquiring a super brain. That when you became aware of what was going on in your brain and you applied certain techniques to it, that you could then master your brain. So he began to talk about the three different types of brains that we interact with. The one was the reptile brain. This is the most base developed brain that we have. It's the one that we, according to him, shared with reptiles, which is kind of interesting because in the story of Adam and Eve, of course, the animal that tempts Eve is the snake. And so he could say that this is the snake brain, and it is the one that just wants and wants to take over more territory and wants to eat more and wants more sex and doesn't care what it does to anyone about anything. It just wants. And frankly, this sounds very much like flesh to me, although I don't think it is entirely flesh, because I think there are things that interact along the way. I'm getting ready to get onto my driveway, and we've got some cars coming down, so I may stop and wave, or I may stop and talk. We'll see. Maybe Alan is taking a trip to the dump. Just a second. I think he maybe is taking a trip to the dump. I don't know. I'll just wave. Oh no, there's like, these things are happening, and this is Sunny. So, Sunny is the wife of the people who are renting our little rock house, Dave and Sunny. Cute couple. It's great to have them in there. Anyways, so that's reptile brain. That's the, you know, grunting, I want part of the brain. And he was actually talking about a technique. This is where we actually came into the program, and I didn't get the technique. But I would guess the technique is basically you can recognize that your reptile brain is grunting, but you don't necessarily have to give in to what it wants. That you can distract yourself, that you can do something else. Then he talked about the limbic brain, which is where our emotions are. And he was saying that with the limbic brain, I'm getting my mail, one moment. Let's see, they did pick up, good, picked up the package. He was saying that with the limbic brain, we can use this for our maximum benefit. And he said, how we do that is we ask ourselves some questions. Again, trying to become aware of what's going on in our brain. And the two questions that we ask ourselves is, what am I feeling right now? Is that feeling good for me? He said, for instance, if we say, what am I feeling right now? Oh, I'm in emotional distress. I'm upset about something. I'm discouraged about something. I'm complaining about something. I'm frustrated about something. He said, what you need to do is when you're there, you need to call up a memory of some time when you were experiencing love or joy or happiness. And he said, there's actually science to back this up. I'm backing into my garage. That as you recall these memories of love and joy and happiness and these kind of things, that your brain reacts to that and begins releasing the same chemicals that it releases when you had the original experience whose memory you are invoking. I think, whose memory you are invoking. Okay, which is pretty interesting. And so if you continually repeat that process, as you repeat things, you get in the habit of saying, oh yeah, okay, I'm in a little mess. But remember yesterday, it was such a beautiful sunset, and it was that we keep ourselves in a pattern of enjoying life as opposed to being torn up in distress. And then he also talked about the intellectual brain, and that's where we reason and we plan to be creative, and that's what gives us our free will and all that kind of stuff. And he said what he recommends on how to use that is to reflect on the meaning of life. You keep asking yourself, why am I here? You know, I'm not just here to conquer and to get and to strive and to bully over people, but I'm here to make a positive contribution to people. And he was talking about the fact that as we do this then, as we get in the habits of doing these things, that we can actually exercise mind over brain, that we always had a choice. And this is where it got interesting, because he had this cute little girl bring up pizza. I thought it was very interesting that he had a cute little girl dressed in black bring up pizza. Not a guy, but a cute little girl bring up pizza. And he says, okay, I can look at this pizza, and my reptile brain says, oh, pizza, me want lots of pizza, you know. Whereas my integrated brain talks to itself. And it says, oh, you know, some of that pizza may be good, but if you eat too much of it, that's not really good for you. Maybe you should just have one piece. Okay, well, this sounds very, very much to me like the war between the flesh and the spirit. That the flesh is going, oh, me want pizza. And the spirit's saying, yeah, but maybe you should pass. And then it's up to us to decide what we're going to do. He also talked about the idea of mindfulness. In his definition, mindfulness was paying attention devoid of judgment, analysis, and calculation. Now, I would change that just a little bit to say that mindfulness is paying attention devoid of negative judgment, negative analysis, and negative calculation. Because I think there's a real benefit to being mindful of what's happening around you and saying, oh yeah, I should do that for so-and-so, and then going and doing it. Happened to me today. It happened a couple of days ago. I have a friend who's going through a divorce. And I happened to see him and say, hey, how's it going? And so he started talking to me. And I know I've been through that. So I know anytime you do that to someone who's going through a divorce, they're going to want to talk for a while. And I knew at the time that I did it that he was going to want to talk for a while. And I would probably lose a half an hour. And it was time that I could have been billing, doing things, earning money. But at that point, I understood, I was mindful of the elements that were involved in my life at that point. And so I was able to make a positive judgment that it was more important for me to spend that time talking to him as opposed to billing hours. So I just went off the clock and we had a very nice conversation for a half hour. And hopefully I was able to encourage him. So it is through this mindfulness they were talking about on Superbrain that we are able to turn our life from reactive to creative, that we're not driven by our reptile brain, that we're not driven by our emotions, that we're not driven by negative analysis from our intellect that says, oh, nothing's ever going to work out. You're never going to be able to accomplish that. In fact, we can step back and say, no, those things are not true. And this is what is true. And so it was fun to listen to this man who's a very learned man and listen to the way he was classifying, he was suggesting approaches, he was thinking about this activity that's going on in his brain, because as I was listening to him, I could just like take all the pieces of my little framework of flesh and spirit and just go, okay, that plugs in there, that plugs in there. Then, and at the end of the day, we're basically saying the same thing. We're basically saying, I've just lost my light and I'm going to open and shut the garage door to get it back again. We're basically saying, don't just go through your life just bandied about by the activity that's inside your brain. Go through your life being aware of it and making good decisions about what you're going to listen to and what you're not going to listen to, about what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. And he gave a lot of just the standard advice at the end. He said, you need to eat a balanced diet, limit sugar, salt, fat. The reptilian brain craves these, but you need to limit processed foods. Better to eat olive oil, whole vegetables, blueberries, dark chocolate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That sleep is important. That you should reduce stress with meditation or yoga. Try to live in the moment. He was saying how important exercise is. That he said we've discovered that we actually do, it's called neurogenesis, we actually make nerve cells in our brains. We manufacture them our whole life, and one of the things that stimulates that is exercise. That you need to preserve your neuroplasticity of your ability to adapt, and you do that by constantly learning new things. That's what I love about writing. I just love the fact that I can learn new things when I'm writing these books. And I told a friend this week that my goal in writing every series is to answer some big question that I have about life, about how I relate to life. And this new series, Far Forth Fables, that I started with Amanda and the Skleeberry Tree, is really going to be about how do I live within the context of globalization, industrialization, fair trade, free trade. How do I live as a citizen of the world, as a member of a first world country? What do I do? And so, you know, it is all very interesting. One of the other things that the doctor said is you need to stay busy. And in that staying busy, you need to help others. You need to be reaching out to others, because it's that contact and that relationship that keeps us vital. And I'm listening to all that and going, yes, relationship. I like it. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.